now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good evening, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. Well, if you're new to this program, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health, and it's all within the context of relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with each other, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. It is my great pleasure to be with you here today, and every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I'm happy to report that in addition to the regular podcast, you can also access these broadcasts via iTunes. So if you miss a portion of all of these shows, you can always download them and listen to them at a more convenient time. So if you would also like to be part of the show today, please call in 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. 6008. Well, how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are safe and you are at peace. Before I begin tonight's show, I just wanted to just give you a heads up regarding next week's show with July 28th. Can you believe it already? Coming into the end of July. That show is going to be entitled A Rose by Any Other Name. And we're going to be taking a look at just the stages of growth and transformation that not only roses go through, but also our spiritual lives. So tune in next Tuesday for A Rose by Any Other Name. And like I said, I will be taking your calls in the second half of the show today. And I encourage you to call in because I would certainly love to get your heart on today's subject, When Our Struggles Lead Us Home. Well, here we are in summer, smack dab in the middle of summer, and now is the time of the year when many people take vacations or they plan some adventure. And you and I both know that even the best laid plans never work out exactly as we expect them to. Something always comes up. We always forget something, or the weather doesn't cooperate, or something else goes wrong. It just never goes according to plan. Because after all, everything looks great on paper until, but still. Well, rarely is a journey just a journey. The miles that we travel are often filled with anticipation, assumptions, even our attitudes about what lies ahead. Excitement often causes our hearts to swell, and maybe at times our heads will swell, as we ask, I wonder what I'm going to find. I wonder what this trip is going to be like. I wonder how long it's going to take. And of course, the ever popular, are we there yet? Well, however, instead of sitting back and enjoying the ride, how often do we become fixated on answering these questions? And, you know, let's hurry up and get there. The quicker, the better. In fact, we might even lose sight of the transformative purpose of the journey itself. But still, we may be in the habit of asking these questions of who and what and when and where and why because of our past experiences. After all, don't we want to stay on course? Well, indeed, where we have come from and where we have been often influences us on where we think we want to go on this journey and just exactly what will we find. Well, let's take this journey metaphor into the psycho-spiritual realms, and let's start probing a little bit deeper into the recesses of the core of who we are. Because the journey inward, I find, has striking similarities to the journeys that we take outward. In other words, even within the struggles we face in life, these struggles often lead us back to ourselves. They often lead us back to a familiar place, because they do indeed lead us home. On one hand, journeys have often been misunderstood as having just a strictly linear or a logical sequence, containing a specific beginning and ending point. But a psycho-spiritual journey is far less defined. Oh, we can point to a specific time when we realize that we're seeking a psycho-spiritual path, but quite often, this kind of journey takes us into ourselves and ultimately beyond ourselves. In other words, at times our psycho-spiritual journey circles back and presents us with life lessons that we have yet to learn. These lessons are often open-ended, unknown, and even mysterious. But the fact is that the psycho-spiritual journeys require a faith that takes us beyond our personal assumptions. It takes us beyond our personal boundaries. They take us out of our comfort zones and our so-called limitations. They take us to self-discovery and wonder, not so much in about how far we've come, but more in terms of how far we have yet to go. In fact, you might say that the more we know, the more we don't know, but this doesn't mean that we simply give up. One of my favorite quotes comes from T.S. Eliot, who says, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." You see, there's a newness to discovery, a childlike faith, as it were, that we need to remain open even to the mysteries of God. In fact, no matter how far the inward journey and that we believe that we've traveled, we should never believe that we have arrived or believe that there's nothing left for us to learn or that we've seen it all. To our surprise, these journeys are more about coming to terms with our authenticity and however uncertain we are about it, of what lies ahead. And yet we can take comfort in the fact that we're never alone on the journey. We are in full view of millions and millions of people who have gone on before us. We are connected to our ancestors by our blood and soul and the relentless desire to pursue the one who has called us by name. Our stories certainly connect with theirs as one continuous narrative of ironic encounters with ourselves and one another and God. And perhaps it is this aspect of life that is filled with irony. This is exactly where we just might begin to see God in our lives. Indeed, irony, it has to be one of those more popular themes in all stories. Irony is a theme that writers use to invoke just a wide range of feelings in us, from shock and surprise to anger and disappointment and everything in between. And the favorite places I'm convinced writers use irony are in the stories that convey journeys. Now, let's see a show of hands, shall we? But how many of you remember watching National Lampoon's Vacation? Certainly fitting to watch the reruns again at this time of the year. Well, if you recall, the Griswolds are planning to take a trip from Chicago to that ever-popular place, Wally World. And all kinds of strange things happen along the way. They end up buying a new car, even before they leave. Then the hubcaps are stolen, and Clark makes a wrong turn, one wrong turn after another. And then they stop by to see Cousin Eddie and Catherine, but they end up taking Aunt Edna along, who dies in the car along the way. Then they become stranded in the desert, and Clark eventually finds a mechanic that scams him out of the rest of his money to fix the car. And despite all the events and the begging of Ellen and the kids, Clark W. Griswold is even more determined to get to Wally World. Well, they finally arrived the next day to find the park closed for repairs for the next 2 weeks. And that's where the fun really begins. And we can just feel the disappointment, like all the effort, all the money, all the time, all the worrying, and still didn't reach our destination. We still didn't get to have fun. Well, though frustrating at times, irony, on the other hand, comes with a purposeful lesson attached to it. In fact, irony has a way to teach us those life-changing lessons if we are willing to listen to its message and understand what it requires from us. For me, regardless of the circumstances, it's all about the journey, not the destination. And to be quite honest, this was a hard lesson for me to understand because, well, I just wanted to hurry up and get there. Whenever I watch a movie or read a book that involves a group of people going from one place to another, in my mind, I strap on this proverbial seatbelt and I hang on for the ride because it's going to be a wild one. And I know that although the characters are destined to complete their trip, the real journey occurs on the inside of each person. This wonderful transformation, this realization occurs. For example, in the movie The Wizard of Oz is a classic case of irony. Dorothy and her three companions are off to see the wizard in order that he might grant them what they believe they lack. The Tin Man needed a heart. The Scarecrow needed a brain. The Cowardly Lion needed courage. And of course, Dorothy just wanted to go home. Well, on the Yellow Brick Road, their journey is filled with dangerous encounters and harrowing escapes from the Wicked Witch of the West and her minions. And after the witch is defeated, as the wizard commanded them, and all was well, the four companions go back to the wizard to receive their reward. Then the wizard takes them back in time and explains that through their ordeal, they each displayed what they thought they lacked. For example, the Tin Man displayed tremendous heart of devotion and loyalty. The Scarecrow actually turned out to be the brains of the outfit. The Cowardly Lion showed remarkable courage in the face of overwhelming odds. And Dorothy, as we all know, had the ability to go home anytime she wanted. She finally realized that there was no other place more magical than her own home and those who loved her. And yet, no matter how many times we watch The Wizard of Oz, how many times do we desire to go in search of something deeper and more meaningful in our relationship with others and God, only to realize that we just may have been looking for what we already have? All that was needed was it for us to realize it and then to reclaim it as our own. We come away with the understanding of it's always been with us. It's always been there. And what has clouded our vision to understanding that? Well, on that note, I wanted to share with you my initial steps or my journey towards reclaiming my authentic self. It all started with Bear Butte, South Dakota. Bear Butte, or Mothopata, is considered a sacred place among the Cheyenne and Lakota people. I was drawn to this mountain because prominent Native American chiefs such as Red Cloud and Crazy Horse, Sweet Medicine, Sitting Bull, Frank Fool's Crow, all made pilgrimages to this mountain to seek God's will for their lives and the lives of their communities. Bear Butte was and is also an important site for the Sioux and Cheyenne Vision Quest, in which a seeker finds a solitary place on the mountain to pray, or to dream, or to meditate, and to sing and to cry out for a transformative vision from God. Now, if you've ever been out to North Dakota, and actually it's Sturgis, North Dakota, you know that Bear Butte from a distance is quite impressive. Its peak rises over 1,200 feet above the surrounding plain, and climbing Bear Butte was no small journey. But then again, any spiritual journey that involves both the external and internal is no small feat. Well, as I had my trip planned, I finally got to the mountain and I stood at its base. I stood there for the longest time and I just remembered the stories that I was told about this site. I had traveled a great distance and my expectations were very high. I was so excited. And I also imagined the number of footprints that have walked its soil and how many prayers must have been offered by countless native generations. Well, after quietly saying my own prayer of gratitude, I started to hike the twisting trail on an ever-increasing incline. I remember how focused I was on getting to the top. For me, reaching the summit was the end of the journey, or so I thought. After all, everyone I talked to said that was the best part of the climb, was actually reaching the top, a place where you can see four states. Well, on the way up, I would stop occasionally, and I would rest. I would take a look around, sip some water, and admire the view. But nevertheless, I reminded myself that I needed to keep going if I wanted to reach the peak. Interestingly, along the way, I met fellow hikers coming down from the mountain. And of course, like many ascending hikers, I asked, "How much further?" The response was always the same. "Well, let's see, you're at this and that's such a point, but hang in there. When you get to the top, it's worth it. The view is spectacular, like nothing you've ever seen." Well, fueled by these words of encouragement, I kept on hiking. Finally, I reached the top of the mountain, and I then understood what they meant. The journey was indeed worth it. I stood on this wooden platform and held a spectacular view in four directions. The air was cool and breezy and spoke a kind of whispering melody as it blew through the colorful tobacco ties that lined the long needle pine trees. I sat there for the longest time, just absorbing beauty like I had never seen. And in the quiet humility, I thanked God for the majesty and splendor of creation. In that moment, no other words were necessary. In fact, more words would have spoiled the experience. Instead, it felt as though my spirit was communicating directly with God's spirit. And now I understand why Native Americans consider Bear Butte a very sacred place, because I wanted to stay up there forever, just bathed in that spiritual presence. Well, what seemed to be like hours on the mountaintop, well, you know, the time had come, I realized, for me to come down from the mountain. And little did I know that my good friend Irony was waiting right there, right waiting for just the right moment to teach me what I had failed to see all this time. And as I hiked down the mountain now, of course, much faster than I did going up, I met other hikers on the ascent. And to my surprise, they also asked the question, "Hey, how much further?" To which I replied, "Well, you're about halfway or two-thirds of the way up, but hang in there. It's worth it. The view is spectacular, like nothing you've never seen." Well, no sooner had I wished my fellow hikers well and taken a couple of steps, and that's where it hit me. I had just missed the whole point of the journey. Although my goal was to climb the top of the mountain, I had forgotten the most basic lesson of all: seeing the beauty of the mountain along the way. I was so preoccupied with the end that I had missed the lessons that appeared to me with every step I took. Indeed, the journey itself is where the real transformation occurs. Tiwa Native American mystic, ceremonial dancer, artist, and writer Joseph Rael, beautiful painted arrow, he emphasizes how mountains metaphorically refer to the human heart. He writes, "The traditional form of a vision quest was to reach the top of a mountain. Going to the top of a mountain or any high place has the quality, symbolically, of going to the heart or the center of vibration, where we search not just for the ordinary awareness, but for the highest possibility in conscious awareness. The mountaintop is in the environment for the highest potential because the vibration of light there is of very high quality. It is on top of a vision quest mountain where heart and mind are bonded together." Well, whenever we gaze at or we climb mountains, we may not realize the psychological and even spiritual interdependence that we have from mountains for our survival and well-being. For example, people and wildlife depend upon mountains for its agricultural and forest benefits, as well as for the source of water and nutrients. And we have come to depend on the minerals, such as coal or iron ore, shale, methane, copper, gold, clay, silver, nickel, chromium, etc. We depend on these minerals for our everyday use. Mountains also provide a safe habitat and conservation for wildlife, as well as it does affect climate conditions, such as blocking much of the wind and moisture on the windward side of the mountain. And lastly, mountains are also known for their aesthetic beauty and recreational opportunities, as avid hikers and national park enthusiasts visit them year after year. Well, and speaking of irony, we also find the same lesson in our own psycho-spiritual journey. Sometimes we get so focused on perhaps the end result, or let's say, I just want to get to heaven, that we miss the opportunities or the process along the way. The times when God is right beside us, the subtle ways in which God's Spirit, God's presence speaks to us in creation, relationships, even during times of chaos and grief. One of the more famous parables that Jesus told his disciples was the parable of the sheep and the goats. It's found in Matthew's gospel. And if you are familiar with the parable, you'd be reminded that Jesus tells them that one day people are going to be separated as sheep are separated from goats. And it's all based on either what they did or didn't do. And this is what I mean. There was a time, when the measuring stick, or I should say the measuring stick, is based on, what have you done to your fellow human beings, one to another? When they were hungry, did you feed them? When they were thirsty, did you feed them? When they were sick or in prison, did you visit them? If they were in need of clothing, did you clothe them? And so on, and so on, and so on. Because Jesus really wraps up this parable by saying, when you've done it to the least of these who need these simple basic needs, it's as if you were doing it to me. And that famous line in that parable is when those who are sent away because they just simply didn't do these things, their response was, Lord, just exactly when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or we saw you as a stranger, or you needed clothes, or you were sick or in prison? And Jesus comes back and, in a sense, tells them, if truth be told, there are times that we never see God in everyday circumstances because we're not even paying attention. You see, despite the fact that we are capable of accomplishing many wonderful things in our lives, we cannot go from one experience to another without something changing or transforming us. We are forever changed by our experiences. And this is not only the ironic message of the Wizard of Oz, but it's also grounded in the gospel stories, that no matter where Jesus went in his life or where people travel today, there are people wondering where God fits into their lives. I mean, I hear these questions almost on a daily basis. They ask, do I have a place in the good news, or am I excluded? Can the gospel message find a place in me? How do you know that God loves me? How do I know that I love God? And can God or others or even me, can I forgive myself for all that I have done? And does my faith and religion and spirituality allow me to be an authentic, genuine person? These are all poignant and relevant questions because they strike at the very heart of our need to reclaim our genuineness and authenticity. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So again, if you would like to call in, the number is 800-627-6008. 800-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, a word about next week's show. It's entitled A Rose by Any Other Name. So we're going to be looking at the comparisons between our spiritual growth, our inner growth, and that of the transformation of a rose in its various stages, or the rose bush. Well, earlier in today's show, we've been talking about when and where we are transformed along our spiritual journey. And for me, it's this image of mountains that I connect with most as moving towards authenticity. In fact, if you've ever seen my book or ever purchased it, the picture on Reclaiming Authenticity is me standing in front of Bear Butte. That is me, you know, the picture is coming from, the back of me. And it is 8 o'clock in the morning and it was already unbearably hot. And I remember I've been to Bear Butte five times, and each time it's just it takes me further and further into just myself in terms of reclaiming my authenticity. But like you said, if you have never read the book Reclaiming Authenticity, I invite you to purchase it. It talks about, actually that carries the theme of mountains throughout the book itself, as well as what does it mean to reclaim our authentic selves. What's holding us back? What encourage us to go deeper? And so on and so forth. And as I said, I connect with mountains, and Bear Butte is probably, just one of many mountains I've been on. But Bear Butte always holds a special place in my heart. And for you, your special place just might be the ocean. It might be a forest. It might be a cave or the desert where you feel, the most connection. Either way, a spiritual journey always leads us back to ourselves to transform and transcend our limitations. One of the things that I had shared in the first half of the show is the ascending of Bear Butte, or going up the mountain. And again, a very common theme of people who have, shall we say, mountaintop experiences, or those profound moments when you could literally reach out and touch the Spirit of God, that God's presence is just very, very real, very palpable. And you just want to stay right there. You just want to stay in that moment. You don't want to do anything. You don't want to say anything. You don't want to spoil it. You just like, oh, wouldn't this be great if we could just stay right here all the time and just enjoy the mountaintop experiences? Well, life doesn't happen that way. You know, sooner or later, we have to come down from the mountain. Sooner or later, we have to get back to work. Sooner or later, we have to re-engage with society. And the mountaintop experiences, they are important because they fuel us and they give us a glimpse, and they are, you know, quite nurturing. But there's a time when we have to go back into society and take what we have been given and to share it with others. Well, these days, there's a lot of talk about reducing carbon footprints, from eliminating greenhouse gases and industrial emissions and the effects of mining to the global warming debate and conservation. Yet there's something that I always listen for when we have these conversations about conservation, and it's how the damaging effects of our carbon footprints clearly mimic the damaging effects of our interpersonal footprints and what they do to each other. What is this effect? It's just a striking parallel that the way we treat nature is, in a sense, how we treat one another. And this is what I mean. Today, it's often considered the norm, if not the expectation, that people will walk all over one another. You know, it's almost expected that people will lie and cheat and steal, and then expect that these actions will have no psychological or spiritual consequences. And if we assume this, we are certainly gravely mistaken. And as evidence from our attitudes and our actions, we have not learned from previous generations' discoveries and their mistakes. We clearly do not possess the ancient wisdom that comes from recognizing those lessons of respect, dignity, and value, and gratitude passed on to us in the created order of things. Or to put it another way, it should be glaringly obvious to us that the way we treat our environmental resources and even animals is a direct reflection of our attitudes and behaviors towards each other. In fact, despite of all our searching for the psycho-spiritual wholeness, we do not possess such wisdom because we don't understand how we are spiritually and emotionally fragmented. However, it's also from this understanding that we recognize the opportunity that is before us to heal this relationship, to heal these relationships to ourselves and others, and we can even heal this relationship that we have with the land. And for those who seek a heightened psycho-spiritual awareness, mountains also have a lot to teach us about our interpersonal and intrapersonal relationships. Interpersonal meaning with God and with others, and intrapersonal meaning with ourselves. And as previously mentioned, standing at their base, mountains should remind us just how small we are in comparison. As we hike or climb, or let's say you love to swim or bike, we are struck by the beauty and splendor of life that surrounds us. And upon reaching the summit, many people sense a stronger connection to themselves and to God, as well as perceive a greater perspective of the world below. And yet in those moments, we have a greater awakening of how our uniqueness has been gifted by God, as well as our growing edges and vulnerable areas we have yet to, let's say, surrender to God. In this sense, we're overcome with a sense of gratitude and understanding when we come to that realization. Awareness always generates gratitude. Gratitude always generates love. And even though we may not know what we might discover about ourselves, people continue to seek God with the help of mountains or oceans or rivers or deserts and so forth. But whatever that we experience can be a powerful psycho-spiritual transformation that leaves us unlike we were before. As I said, we are forever changed by our experiences. And yet, herein lies the irony of humanity. Down through history, you know, certainly history has demonstrated how some people are only drawn to mountains to extract their minerals, but they're not drawn to people. In other words, people will often sell their souls for all the natural resources that they can procure, while at the same time throwing away the most important resource of all. That is relationships established by a loving creator's hand. And this psycho-spiritual disconnection is something that the land does not forget. Indeed, the land remembers. This is something that my Native American friends had just made a great impact with me on. They said that souls and souls have trekked the land for countless generations, and the air that they breathe is the same air we breathe. The same sources of water from which they drank, we drink. The same mountains that they have climbed for their psycho-spiritual renewal, we climb today. These literal and spiritual paths have been blazed for us to follow, and our imprint does not go unnoticed. And as we walk into the footprints of our ancestors and relations, as a great cloud of witnesses, they carefully observe our attitudes and our actions. It's true. The land remembers. Through the countless violence and aggression throughout history in which the stain of blood is communicated, even the blood of those who have laid slain cry out from the land, which is imprinted with the horrors of genocide and desolation. We try to attempt to forget about these tragedies as the so-called history books are written from a softer perspective that romanticizes the harsh reminders of the depraved human interaction. However, the echoes of pain and suffering tell us that their stories need to be heard and told. There's a powerful scene in the movie Imprint, whereby a native elder was standing in the middle of a secluded area, in the middle of a prairie. His head was bowed, but he didn't speak. And when a younger native person approached him and asked, you know, what are you doing? He looked at her and he gave her this profound insight. He said, I stand here and I listen. I listen to the screams of the wounded and the dying carried across the wind and across the prairie. Blood spilled in the ground. We forget about these things, but the trees, they remember. The rocks, they remember. And the earth, it remembers. These all remember when we forget. The story is forever imprinted on this land. But if we listen, they will guide us, give us visions, tell us stories. Past, present, and future all touch one another. Time does not exist. For spirits, time does not exist. Now, can you hear them? Can you hear their cries? By inviting us to understand how creation teaches us about authenticity, we certainly are called to heal from our psycho-spiritual wounds and reclaim our connectedness to all living things. We not only discover who we are in relation to all of creation, but we also understand that we are stewards, entrusted with the care of the world that provides for us. And a vital aspect of this connection is to develop ways to reconnect those fragmented areas of our lives that have been separated by loss, pain, or trauma. And after careful introspection of our wounds, we may realize that we have intentionally or unintentionally given away parts of ourselves as a means of survival. But these are certainly meant to return to us. Native American Chippewa activist Sun Bear refers to this kind of behavior as giving away one's personal power, and it leaves us with little to no precious emotional energy to live genuinely. And in talking to others who have climbed mountains and listened to the ancient wisdom, some people find their experience similar to different parts of a symphony. And I like that. They say, you know, there is a point to in a symphony where the music begins softly, and then it swells to a heart-beating crescendo. The melody carries us along till we find ourselves at the height of its music, and when the sound of the cymbals crash and the timpani thunders a vibration in our hearts and in our throats, we feel our spirits lifted, almost as if though we've been taken to a higher, better place outside of ourselves. Magically transformed, it is within this atmosphere of sound where we want to stay, because the feelings are euphoric. Perhaps it's within this moment of sound where we are able to transcend something in ourselves that we have been unable to do by any other means. Music has that kind of power. What's the old saying that music charms the savage beast? Well, there's some truth in that. But, however, just as quickly as there is a crescendo in that symphony, there's a descent. And it brings us back, you know, down to earth, so to speak. It brings our feet back down to the everyday sounds of traffic and conversations and, you know, the sound of machines. But still, we tell ourselves that we've been on a great journey, which we want to retain for as long as possible. And in that moment, that music carries us as we leave the concert hall. We might even be humming the tune that we heard or still keeping the beat. And it is this distant memory of music that we try to get back. We try to recall it. We try to return there whenever we feel sad or whenever we feel blue. And just as we have to leave the concert hall, we too have to come down from the mountain. And we have to live out in relationships what we have encountered. And if we haven't invested time and authenticity in these relationships, we may find ourselves as emotionally empty and spiritually emaciated as the land itself has been stripped of its resources. Sooner or later, we have to return to our daily routines, and we discover new ways to live this psycho-spiritual transformation in our daily experiences. And as much as we may have experienced the exhilarating psycho-spiritual transformation, the irony is that these life-changing moments are not necessarily for ourselves. Indeed, just as strong as the experience of the psycho-spiritual transformation is, we are then called to transcend these mountaintop experiences by getting beyond our self-serving attitudes and our codependent behaviors, and embrace our mutually shared connection with one another. See, what we need to do is shift our focus from what we get out of this to how do we keep it? And how are we then gifted to serve others? How can we live a life of authenticity that is life-giving to the emotional and physical and spiritual well-being of ourselves and others? Where does this transformation first take place in us? Exactly what is transformed? Are there certain times in our lives when we are more ripe for transformation, or do we just happen to be in the right place at the right time? And are we simply responding to God's call that's stirring our hearts and nudging us along? Well, regardless of these questions, being aware of God's Spirit in our lives always requires a response from us, an act of faith. Remember, ignoring God and indecisiveness to take the initial steps of self-discovery is also a response. And yes, the psycho-spiritual transformation is initiated by God, but it is also an intentional daily effort on our behalf. It's not a passive phenomena. It requires an active participation, or work, if you will, on our part. Transformation places us on a path. It places us on a journey to follow and embrace all of what God has in store for us. I had one, I think he was either a banker or a lawyer I was trying to explain this to, and the only kind of metaphor or language that he could fully understand was contracts. And so what I had explained to him was just imagine that, God is writing up a contract and there is nothing on the page. And God is asking for your signature at the bottom. And God is saying, don't worry about it. I'll fill in the rest. And this lawyer, he started to really sweat. He got nervous because he goes, no, wait a minute. I wouldn't sign anything without knowing exactly what's in the details. And I said, yeah, but that wouldn't require faith. This is if God is saying to us, follow me. Do you trust me? Let me lead you on this journey. And allow me to take you where you need to be, where you need to go. Allow me to work in your heart this wonderful transformation like nothing else can in this lifetime. Well, finally, the lawyer understood this. He still didn't like it, but he understood it. Because, you see, his was a world of contracts and holding people accountable and so forth. Transformation does place us on a path. It places us on a journey to follow and embrace all of what God has in store for us. Yet transformation also compels us to transcend or go beyond ourselves and our surroundings in order to fan the flames of this internal spiritual fire that has been sparked in us. And nevertheless, if we are to open to the lessons that God teaches us through irony, we will be surprised to find how often we look for authenticity in an authentic world based on conditional love. In his book entitled The Return of the Prodigal Son, Henry Nouwen, he zeroes in on this futile search for things that simply cannot satisfy what he terms the ache of the soul. He writes, "At issue here is the question, to whom do I belong? God, or do I belong to the world? Many of my daily preoccupations suggest that I belong more to the world than to God. A little criticism makes me angry, and a little rejection makes me depressed. A little praise raises my spirits, and a little success excites me. It takes very little to raise me up or thrust me down. And often, I am like a small boat in the ocean, completely at the mercy of its waves. All the time and energy I spend in keeping some kind of balance and preventing myself from being tipped over and drowning shows that my life is mostly a struggle for survival. Not a holy struggle, but an anxious struggle resulting from a mistaken idea that it is the world that defines me. However, as long as I keep running about asking, do you love me? I mean, do you really love me? I give all my power to the voices of the world and put myself in chains again because the world is filled with ifs. The world says, yes, of course I love you if you are good looking, if you are intelligent, if you are wealthy, I love you, of course, if you have a good education or if you have a good job and good connections. I love you if you produce much. I love you if you sell much. And I certainly love you if you buy much. There are endless ifs hidden in the world's love. And yet, these ifs enslave me, since it's impossible to respond adequately to all of them. The world's love is and always will be conditional. And as long as I keep looking for my true self in the world of conditional love, I will remain hooked to the world. I will remain trying, failing, trying again. It is a world that fosters addictions because what it offers cannot satisfy the deepest craving of my heart. Now, legend has it that once you've reached the top of Bear Butte, you are supposed to leave a piece of yourself behind in order to take away something better. Now, because Bear Butte is considered a Native American sacred place of the living, people are discouraged from leaving the scattered remains of deceased loved ones. But nonetheless, there is an inherent wisdom about leaving something of yourself behind. The piece of you left behind just might be something in a very literal or physical sense, but maybe a piece of jewelry or another personal token of significance. Or in a metaphorical sense, it's such as a past psycho-spiritual wound, something that symbolizes that. Well, actually, I believe that it means both. Being on the sacred mountain there, I saw many physical signs of what people left behind. Prayer ties filled with tobacco, sacred hoops, dream catchers, various colored cloths filled with sage or other herbs, and feathers attached to trees. These tokens certainly represent prayers of gratitude and thanksgiving or intercession, petition, and other acts of worshiping the Creator and Sustainer of life. Regardless, these personal tokens all displayed a hallowed beauty as they gently swayed in the wind. Now, for myself, I cannot tell you what I left behind because that is between the seeker and God. But nevertheless, I can share with you certainly what I came away with. A renewed sense of seeing the sacredness in all of life and relationships. To be able to look into the heart of others. To be able to understand others and see where they struggle. See where they just are afraid of what they might encounter in relationships. I sensed a connection and a connectedness to all living things like never before. In fact, that experience instilled in me a very profound spiritual transformation that compels me to transcend my own worldview of assumptions and limitations. Indeed, we live in the real world. And as romantic as it sounds as being on a psycho-spiritual journey, we will be faced with dangerous obstacles that perhaps may block our way from the social context in which we live. Not everybody is going to accept our spiritual journey with open arms. Not everybody we encounter or attempt to serve understands or even trusts our motives. And yet we are social beings that we must contend with cultural norms and rituals and expectations. As a result, all things in everyone's life undergoes this transformation, and even work becomes a sense of worshipful service. Within every person, a journey to seek God, there's an ongoing call to authenticity. And this act of worship flows naturally out of the heartfelt spiritual desire to know God and dwell in that holy place. Not only to know God, but to dwell in God, to dwell in God's presence. Indeed, our transformation ultimately encourages us to recognize our capacity for relatedness. The Dalai Lama once said that a change of heart is always a change of mind. And certainly both faculties must undergo transformation for it to take root and to bear fruit in our lives. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Do visit my website and leave me your comments. I'd love to hear them. I can get back to you. And I look forward to spending this time with you next Tuesday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. Take care, be safe, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.